Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Wednesday, the 7th of August, 2024, we have a conversation with Genevieve Greaves talking about a First Nations renewable energy system installed in the remote community of Mumutumburu today, enabling residents to return to country with a 100% renewable energy system and the restoration of critical water and communication services. We'll also be joined by Dean Foley, founder and CEO of Barayamal, talking about the First Nations Economic Forum convened on the 9th of August to coincide with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. We also have a conversation with Dean Greeno, a finalist in this year's Telstra National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art Awards, the longest running and most prestigious art award of its kind in the country. But first, the latest news on NITV Radio.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
Bulletin, Northern Territory Police Commissioner resigns from NT's police union following apology to Indigenous people. Foreign Minister Penny Wong says a ceasefire in the Middle East has never been more urgent. And a five-day tour of key battleground states for Kamala Harris and her running mate Tim Walz. The Northern Territory Police Commissioner Michael Murphy has resigned from the Territory's police union after it criticised him over his apology to Indigenous people at the Gama Festival. The Northern Territory Police Association says it was unconsulted about the apology and claimed it was not the role of the police to assess the success or otherwise of federal government-directed policies, such as closing the gap, the stolen generation, and the intervention, as the commissioner has done. During his apology, Commissioner Murphy said he was deeply sorry for harms and injustices caused by members of the NT Police since it was founded in 1870. A walk of fame has been unveiled in the inner west of Sydney suburb of Newtown, honouring Indigenous artists among other significant Australian performers. Aboriginal dance company Bangara Dance Theatre is on the first of 30 bronze plaques to be installed on Enmore Road to highlight the legacy of the Enmore Theatre built in 1908. Bangara premiered their first show at the Enmore Theatre in 1994 and launched their national tour of Matina there in 2008. Raku Kadel, Community Engagement Manager at Bangara, told NITV, "It is wonderful to be honoured in this way."
We will be the first plaque on what will be our Australian Walk of Fame here, and I think that's really fantastic that the first one is of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Performing Arts Company, and having our footprint here in the inner west.
Foreign Minister Penny Wong says a ceasefire in the Middle East has never been more urgent, as U.S. officials describe negotiations as entering a decisive moment. Foreign Minister Penny Wong has held talks with her U.S. counterpart, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, during AUSMIN, the meeting between Australian and American foreign and defense ministers in Annapolis, Maryland. Senator Wong said the discussions are taking place in the shadow of a deteriorating situation in the Middle East, reiterating calls for a peace deal in the region. Her comments come as Hamas names one of the organizers of the October 7 attacks in Israel as its new leader. Yahya Sinwar replaces Ismail Haniyeh, who was killed in Iran last week in a presumed Israeli attack. Unlike Ismail Haniyeh, who had lived in exile in Qatar for years, Yahya Sinwar has remained in Gaza. He's at the top of Israel's killed list as it seeks to destroy Hamas and its leadership. United States Vice President Kamala Harris has made her first appearance with her newly chosen running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. The pair received a raucous welcome before thousands at a rally in Philadelphia. 60-year-old Walz is a former school teacher and football coach who served in the National Guard for 24 years. The Democrats are hoping he can win back working-class voters. He told the rally Donald Trump will take the U.S. backwards if he regained the presidency.
Donald Trump's not fighting for you or your family. He never sat at that kitchen table like the one I grew up at, wondering how we were going to pay the bills. He sat his country club up in Mar-a-Lago wondering how he can cut taxes for his rich friends.
The two are on a 5-day campaign tour of key battleground states. The British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has held a second emergency meeting over the riots across the United Kingdom. Almost 6,000 police are being mobilized to respond to any disorder. The rioting follows the killing of three girls at a dance class and misinformation spread online that the suspect was an asylum seeker. Mr. Starmer says more than 400 people have been arrested so far and 100 have been charged.
Some in relation to online activity, and a number of them are already in court. And I'm now expecting substantive sentencing before the end of this week. That should send a very powerful message to anybody involved, either directly or online, that you are likely to be dealt with within a week and that nobody, but nobody, should be involving themselves in this disorder.
Nobel Peace Prize laureate Muhammad Yunus has been named chief advisor of Bangladesh's interim government a day after Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina resigned and fled the country following a violent crackdown on a student-led uprising. Local media is reporting Yunus was appointed to the post by the Bangladesh president after he held meetings with student leaders and chiefs of the three military services. 84-year-old Yunus and his Grameen Bank, a microcredit organization, won the 2006 Nobel Peace Prize for work to lift millions out of poverty by granting small loans of less than $150 to the rural poor of Bangladesh. The student leaders had said they wanted Yunus as the chief advisor to the interim government, and a spokesperson for Yunus said he agreed. Senior United Nations officials have appealed to the Security Council for help in getting humanitarian aid in Sudan by all available means to fight famine in at least one site in North Darfur. A global hunger monitor says more than 15 months of war in Sudan and restrictions on aid deliveries have caused famine in North Darfur's Zamzam camp for internally displaced people. Sudan's government has rejected the finding, while Russia cast doubt on it. Senior UN official Edam Wosomu says there's a need for urgent action.
In line with international humanitarian law, we need rapid, safe, unimpeded humanitarian access across Sudan through all possible routes. Given the massive hunger crisis unfolding in North Darfur and other parts of the country, we need to reach people now across borders, across battle lines, by air, by land.
Back home, unions are pushing for 50-cent public transport fares in Queensland to remain when a 6-month trial ends as the state's transport-dominated election campaign ramps up. A petition by Queensland Union to keep 50-cent public transport fares has reached almost 2,000 signatures since the 6-month trial began on Monday. The peak body represents more than 400,000 workers across the state. Near-free fare on public Buses, ferries and trains are part of several cost-of-living initiatives sparked by the government ahead of the October 26 state election. Others include 1,000 energy rebates for households, 20% off car registration and free kindergarten that began in 2024. Premier Stephen Miles has also promised to establish state-owned petrol stations and capped fuel price rises if re-elected. A small earthquake has shaken a town 3 hours east of Melbourne, but there are no reports of damage. The 4.1 magnitude quake hit Woods Point just before 4 o'clock this morning. The State Emergency Service says no building or infrastructure have been reported as damaged. And to sport, Australia has broken the men's team pursuit world record at the Paris Olympics. Oliver Bledin, Sam Welsford, Connor Leahy and Kelland O'Brien finished in 3 minutes 40 seconds to beat the Olympic champions Italy. The Australian cyclists face Great Britain in the final tomorrow morning. And skateboarder Arisa True is Australia's youngest Olympic gold medalist. The 14-year-old claimed that honour after winning in the Women's Park event at the Paris Olympics. And now having a look at the weather across Australia's capital cities, Perth, showers, 21 degrees, Adelaide, sunny, 18, Melbourne, partly cloudy, 17, Hobart, partly cloudy, 15, Canberra, mostly sunny, 15, Wollongong, sunny, 17, Sydney, also sunny, 19, Newcastle, much the same, 20, Brisbane, possible shower, and 23 degrees, Cairns, partly cloudy, 27, Darwin, sunny, 34 degrees, and that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
That was For My Titas, a beautiful one by Barca. I am Bertrand Tungandame, and you're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Wednesday afternoon. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Dean Foley, founder and CEO of Barayamal. Barayamal is the convener of the First Nations Economic Forum, convened on the 9th of August, which is just in 2 days' time, to coincide with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. In the program, we'll also be joined by Dean Greeno, who is a finalist in this year's Telstra National Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Art Awards, the longest running and most prestigious art awards of their kind in Australia. But first, great milestone has been reached today with the launch of a First Nations renewable energy system installed in the remote community of Mumuthumburu in remote Northern Territory. I'm joined by Genevieve Greaves, co-founder of Garawa and supervising director of the short film Pato Country, joining us as a major milestone has been reached today with the successful installation of a solar-powered renewable energy system for Mumuthumburu in the Northern Territory. Thanks to this solar-powered energy system, Mumuthumburu residents will be able to return to country where they can now live permanently, supported by a 100% renewable energy system and the restoration of critical water and communication services. Genevieve, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
This is a really major milestone. Tell us about how this project has come to fruition.
Yeah, it's an incredible milestone. We almost can't believe it ourselves. It's such a wonderful way to evolve this project. But I'll start at the beginning. We're a First Nations storytelling agency. We work across the country, and one of our partners is this amazing black organisation, Original Power. And they work with mob, largely in sort of remote communities, to look for, renewable energy solutions and also to protect countries. So They've been working with the Borroloola community for a number of years, you know, in partnership to develop solar energy solutions. But it's a long road, you know, it's not easy to pull these things off. Along the way, sharing some of the stories from these remote communities like Borroloola. And through that, we've learnt a lot about what's going on, you know, on the ground. And it's pretty dire, really, you know. And we've got climate change, we've got this extreme weather, extreme heat as well. People in remote communities have to use, a lot of the time, have to use these power cards. And if you don't have money, you don't have power. And that, you know, that's really a life and death kind of situation for people on the ground. And once you lose your power, you also lose your water. So through documenting these stories, we got to know Annie Shirley Simon out at Borroloola, one of our directors, Walpuri director Joseph Giacomo Egger. He was out there telling some of these stories, met Annie Shirley, and he was really touched by her story. And she'd had to move to Borroloola because she had no power on her homelands, you know, so she wanted to live on her homelands, but it was just actually impossible. And so when there was an opportunity to make a short film with the ABC, we put forward Annie Shirley's story. We made this film. It's been screened on ABC TV and, you know, Sydney Film Festival and different places. And what we're trying to do is just really amplify her voice and highlight, you know, the tragedy of people having to leave their country and leave their homelands because of power. After that, we got some money to build an impact campaign. And so what we've been trying to do with Original Power is really highlight to the broader community what these issues are, and particularly in the Northern Territory right now, because we're leading up to a state election. And we really want this issue, you know, of energy sovereignty in remote communities to be front and center, you know, when people are voting. And we also set up this fundraiser to get Annie Shirley home. And the incredible thing that's happened is we've been able to raise the money with a large donation to get Annie Shirley back to her country, and it's underway now. The solar panels are being fixed onto her home, on her homelands, and she and her family are going to be able to move out there soon. So, yeah, it's beyond exciting for us, you know, to start from that place where, you know, we were sort of experiencing and seeing this huge problem, then to be able to, you know, be part of that solution is just amazing.
Yeah, Auntie Cheryl's story is a really powerful one, and this besets many community members. It has to be mentioned that as a result of loss of power, many other services are withdrawn or experience a reduced serviceability, including drinking water, bore pumping and communications, education and employment programs. These homelands actually become ineligible for annual municipal essential service funding, community development programs, CDEP, and other employment programs that support homeland development and actually make life livable and sustainable.
Well, yeah, it's really about energy justice, isn't it? You know, it's I think a lot of Australians would be shocked to understand how harsh it is for mob living in remote communities. Like you say, there's, like, it's so expensive. You know, the food, like, I live in Darwin and the food is overpriced here, but it's a whole nother story. When you're getting out to remote communities, the expenses are so high for people who just want to actually live on their traditional lands. They don't have the same access to services that, you know, most Australians take for granted. And then, you know, to have this system of power cards, yeah, if you don't have money when you're living in this, like, really extreme kind of economic situation, when you don't have money, you actually just don't have power. And when you think about, yeah, temperatures climbing and, you know, climate change coming, that is a matter of life and death for people, and it's not okay. But what's amazing about this, you know, community at Borroloola is they're taking matters into their own hands, you know. So they're building the Nidara Aboriginal Cooperative, they're building their own solar plant. You know, all the solutions for these problems are in community. They're moving ahead. They're not waiting for anybody. They're just actually building their own solar project. And Original Power have worked with another community up here at Mullinger. They've got a solar project as well. So the first remote community, you know, community-owned solar project was launched about a month ago in the Northern Territory, and it's amazing to see this progress happening, you know. So what we really need is governments to just back these communities who are actually at the forefront of making change for themselves. They just need people to get behind them and really support their aspirations.
I saw in one of the stories that are really troubling in the area that one community had already installed a solar system, but it was managed by a third party, and then one day they deemed it unsafe and they just shut it down. How is this one going to operate?
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot of the ins and outs of how the sort of plants will run, you know, because I'm sort of on the outside of all of that. I'm part of the sort of storytelling team that's amplifying this story. But the little I do know is that, you know, in Borroloola, Nyadara Cooperative has been set up. So it's a community-owned organisation and the solar plant is theirs. So I think, knowing Original Power, this is the way they'll be doing it. They're all about self-determination. So they're all about communities having the power and having you know, our own solutions. So I think that project is community owned, and everything that Original Power do is community owned. And I know it's like extremely complex, like, you know, trying to wade through all the legislation and all the technology, and it has. It's taken years and years of a lot of hard work. But I know the goal is community-owned systems that aren't reliant on any other third parties, that aren't reliant on government, that are sort of funded through philanthropy and crowdfunding and, you know, different sources of money. And the aim is really for, yeah, communities to be self-determining. That's what Original Power are all about, is self-determination. I think what they're developing is really like the lead, you know, it's the leading models in how to do this work, because I think, yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening around which, you know, can sometimes be exploitative, or, you know, companies wanting to make a profit, or, you know, and the whole aim of this is to take that power away from people outside of the community and to give it back you know, to mob themselves. Yeah. So people are running it themselves. They've got jobs, they've got opportunities, you know, and they can manage and fix that system if they have problems. Like, that's the goal, really.
As mentioned earlier, the reduction in power supplies really affects every aspect of life and makes people become actually semi-nomadic or transient, because they can only return to community when there's a supply of power, or it's bearable to be there without electricity.
There's a real injustice that's happening here, and I think there's just not enough awareness broadly about, yeah, what is being faced in remote communities. Like, I'm living, as I said, I'm in Darwin, and I didn't know enough, you know, about what was going on, you know, on my doorstep up here in the Northern Territory. But it's also really important that people in other states are aware of this. Like, you know, there's kind of this sense that, oh, this is a long way away, and, you know, it's not really my problem, or, you know, I can't do anything about it. But we really have to sort of band together on these issues, and really it's really important that people in the southern states are supporting campaigns like this and bringing their voice to it, because unless people down south sort of care about this, you know, federal politicians and Northern Territory politicians won't care, really. So we really have to get behind these mob in remote communities and support their aspirations and, you know, support them through what is going to be a really kind of crucial transition into clean energy with climate change. Like, this is just crucial now that people have these energy solutions, or they're not going to be able to stay in their country, you know, and that's the reality. So, yeah, it's this energy transition we're going through, it has to be fair, it has to be just, and there has to be access, no matter where you live, to the same kind of opportunities and services.
Yeah. Now, before I let you go, I know you're the supervising director of the short film Power to Country. Where can people access this short film and know more about this energy inequality?
Yeah, well, I would encourage your listeners to go to ABC iView, and you can watch Power to Country there. I'd encourage you to go to Original Power's website. There's a lot of good resources there, and have a look at what they're up to. And there's some short films we've made which highlight some of the issues we've been talking about. And then also look for the Power to Country Impact Campaigns. That's the web presence we've created to support Aunty Shirley to get home. So you can have a good look at that and see how that kind of impact campaign has evolved. So, yeah, there's lots of material out there to engage with and kind of share and amplify, and encourage you to, yeah, post it on your social media and tell your friends. And, you know, because it's amazing that we got Aunty Shirley home, but that's just one step in the journey, you know. As you said, there's a lot of other people who also need that support. And the more we can amplify these stories, the more we can make sure that attention's brought to this, particularly leading up to the NT election, and let, you know, politicians know that this is important to us.
Genevieve Greaves, thank you very much for joining us on ITV Radio to talk to us about this exciting news, an energy system installed in the community of Mumutumburu.
Thanks so much for having me, and I really appreciate the support.
And that was Genevieve Greaves, co-founder of Garua and supervising director of the short film Power to Country, a film that tells the story of Shirley Simon, Auntie Shirley Simon, who was forced to leave her community because of a lack of ongoing power supply. Now, this conversation will be published on our website shortly after the program. It's time for a break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we'll explore the First Nations Economic Forum convened on the 9th of August, which coincides actually with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. As you'll hear, the theme of the forum is Indigenous identity theft. For all these stories and more, stay tuned. That was Garakuije Namabaya, Emily Waramara, coming to you on NITV Radio this Wednesday afternoon, broadcasting from Nam on the Kulin Nation. Coming up next, we explore the first First Nations Economic Forum, bringing First Nations people from right across the world to talk about one major topic, Indigenous identity theft.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I'm joined by Dean Foley, founder and CEO of Barayamal, to talk about the First Nations Economic Forum that will be held on the 9th of August, coinciding with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. Dean, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to have it with you.
The theme of this event is Aboriginal identity fraud. Before we delve into the forum itself, can you tell us about Aboriginal identity fraud? How big is it?
Fraud in Australia is worth billions of dollars. It's hard to put an exact amount on the total and Indigenous identity fraud, but, you know, it could be costing tens of millions and, you know, costing the opportunity to close the gap to.
We've spoken about this on several occasions on NITV Radio, but this time around, you're bringing in speakers from around the world, including some of the biggest academics and specialists on this topic.
Yeah, very humbled. You know, people could join. It's just a small community event, you know, for free, just to bring awareness to the issues. So, you know, I haven't got, you know, heaps of money to do it or to actually pay the speakers. The speakers are just doing it off their own back, and because it's such a, you know, important issue, there's not many resources going to Indigenous people. So we need to make sure, you know, what is allocated to Indigenous people are actually going to, you know, genuine Indigenous people who need it. For me personally, I think probably US, the Native Americans over there are probably leading the charge around Indigenous identity fraud. And yeah, we've got somebody from the Tribal Alliance Against Frauds that, you know, doing a lot of research, academic research, reaching out to different communities to try and expose, you know, people identifying as frauds. And, yeah, it's just a pleasure to have representatives from the US and Canada who are leading that front. I think in Australia there are a few people speaking out, like Victoria Williams, the guy from Metro, Nathan Morin, but you know, there's different laws to freedom of speech too, and I think a few people are a bit scared of being sued in Australia, where, you know, over US and Canada, who just convicted Indigenous identity fraud, you know, it's a bit more open and, you know, freedom of speech kind of thing.
Yeah, when you mention the speakers and the academics involved, I know Victoria Grieve Williams is one of the leading researchers on this topic. She's based partly in Melbourne and in the United States, where she's published numerous reports and studies on Indigenous identity and philosophies and many other areas. And it's really, really very powerful to see her in your forum, and then having also First Nations people from the US and Canada. Especially, this is convened on a very significant day, which is August 9, United Nations International World Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah, it's a big day, you know, for Australia and around the world to celebrate Indigenous people, culture, and you know, to talk about issues and opportunities to help close the gaps. Because obviously, you know, Australia is not the only one who's not making much progress in closing the disparity gaps. And the more, you know, we can talk about this on these days that have a international platform, I think the better it'd be. Because, you know, sometimes when you reach out to the Australian government, they don't really listen. You know, they're happy with the status quo. So, yeah, having that platform to speak internationally and hopefully have, you know, participants or representatives from the United Nations join to hear some of these challenges would be invaluable to create real change.
And I see that in, you know, the, you know, just preparing for this conversation, I quickly browsed your website and saw the keynote speakers and some of the themes that will be explored. There's a case that's also mentioned, the one that should raise everyone's attention, because identity fraud linked also to black cladding. And the case you mentioned there is about an entrepreneur from the Northern Territory who was awarded a grant of more than $400,000 just through faking their identity.
Yeah, that's a scary thing. So he was awarded around about $400,000 from, off the top of my head, Indigenous Business Australia for a business loan. And allegedly, he wasn't Indigenous to Australia. He was Indigenous to New Zealand, supposedly Maori heritage. And the Aboriginal Land Council organisation up in Northern Territory realised their mistake. They were kind of flabbergasted that, you know, they voted him in or gave him an Indigenous identity, and they revoked it and, yeah, told him to go back to the community he allegedly is from. But, you know, we just had Albanese announce that he wants to focus on economic development in Indigenous communities. So something like this, you know, if he's going to pump more money into Indigenous and Business Australia for more business loans or more housing loans, because obviously housing is a big problem for everybody, but in particular Indigenous people. So if he's going to say we're going to create 3,000 more Indigenous people owning their own home, like how does he know they're actually going to be Indigenous? Like where are the, you know, why aren't they looking into this more and making sure that the resources are going to the right people to help close the disparity gaps? Because, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's heaps of potentially fraudsters that have got housing loans or more business loans through Indigenous Business Australia.
We've mentioned one of the keynote speakers. Can you tell us a word or two about some other participants and speakers at the event?
So one of them's Canadian, Drew Hayden Taylor, who did a big documentary for, was it CBC, off the top of my head, around Indigenous identity fraud. You know, travelled around Canada, you know, talking about the issue specifically for them. And so, yeah, we got a random filmmaker who's done a documentary on Indigenous fraud in Canada. And we also have, yeah, the Tribal Council, so the Tribal Alliance Against Fraud's TAF in America. So a bunch of volunteer Native Americans working together to weed out the frauds, particularly in academia, that are taking opportunities from, you know, Native Americans.
Now, before I let you go, and I caught you on very short notice, anything you'd like to add to the conversation?
It's good to catch up, and I, you know, appreciate you taking the time to bring more awareness to this. I think, you know, some mainstream media don't take the time to look into it. Even the registrations for the First Nation Economic Forum that we're doing to talk about Indigenous identity fraud. I mean, we've got a few hundred registrations, RSVPs on LinkedIn, but even the registrations for RIMO, which is where we're running the event, the majority of registration and participants to the event are actually Indigenous people. Like, so Indigenous people, from what I'm seeing, they see it as a real issue, but unfortunately, potentially the non-Indigenous people that run the government, that kind of stuff, don't prioritise Indigenous identity fraud and, you know, not really interested. So it's quite a contrast that many, you know, not all, but many Indigenous people have noticed the Indigenous identity fraud and people starting to identify now to get jobs and opportunities. Yeah, so we've got 54 people who are registered that, you know, Indigenous and non-Indigenous allies. There's only 27, so, you know, almost double the participants are Indigenous. So we see that as an issue, and now hopefully the government and the non-Indigenous people running things will come around and see it as an issue and start cracking down on it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something to consider, especially considering the economic impact and the devastation that this can have on communities. Dean Foley, founder and CEO of Barama, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on ITV Radio today.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I'm joined by Dean Greeno, one of the finalists in this year's Telstra National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art Awards, Australia's longest-running and most prestigious art award of its kind. Dean, welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you, Bertrand. It's a wonderful day down here in Nipaluna, just below the Kanamaluka, and I hope everything's well in your country there.
It's beautiful here in Nam, always cold, always unpredictable, but love being in this place. You are one of the finalists. Can you tell us about your entry in the awards and what inspired the creation of the artwork you entered in one of the most prestigious art awards in the country?
I am very lucky. My arts practice itself is centered primarily on being sculptural, but I drew heavily upon my Pakenham culture and where I grew up on Flinders Island. I'm so lucky to be surrounded. My parents, Lola Greeno, Rex Greeno, artists, my grandmother, Dulcie Greeno, is an artist, all these amazing people were iconic in my life growing up. And growing up on Flinders Island, there was always a curiosity. My father's a great drawer, and one of the first pictures I saw of my father was him when he was attending school drawing this magnificent boat, which is exhibiting, opening soon. My father's a crayfisherman, as were all the rest of my family, and this artwork I've created connects heavily to the maritime and seafaring side of my family. Even though Pakenham culture itself is mostly matriarchally driven, I've decided to sort of head towards the patriarchal side with my father, and the artwork comes in two parts. It represents the very unique part of seafaring for Pakenham people, in that one part is a small model of a traditional made paper bark canoe. These bundled canoes were unique to Tasmania. There was three variations of materials used, contextually used for the canoe making. So there was reed, paper bark, and stringy bark. I decided to go with paper bark because the second part of the canoe, which ties to it, is a model of the Cape Barren Island whaler boats, which were built on Cape Barren Island as a response to the Reservation Act. So Cape Barren Island, if people aren't aware, is one of the first offshore detention centres where a lot of people were held in the Reservation Act. and so and which restricted the economics of the island. So industrious and stoic people decided to build boats from the shipwrecks that were crashed around the island, you know, hundreds of them over the years. And the best, and Flinders Island is in the Bass Straits, so it sits between Tasmania and Victoria. It's an ode to all these seafaring histories, for want of a shorter answer.
Wow. No, especially now we are learning even more, because we're learning about this detention center, because, you know, people know about the offshore detention centers, and there's Rottnest Island, which was also one of the most infamous prisons, but nobody knows much about what you just explained to us.
Yeah, it's not like it was a prison or anything, but wow, it might as well have been. I know with my family, my grandmother was Aboriginal under my mother's side, and my grandfather wasn't, and he wasn't allowed on site after, I think it was 5 p.m. So he had to move to another, you know, he was married to Nan, and the house was, and I can't remember the story 100%, but it was more or less just on the edge of the reservation, and he really wasn't allowed on site in his own house because of the strictness of this act. So our culture is strong. As you know, the Tasmanian Pakenham and Palau world people fought some very stringent and hard-fought battles, the Black War way back in the 1800s, et cetera. So there's resilience and the strength within our people. And that's the culture that is at the heart and soul of us that keeps driving us to take the very next step forward. And not willing ever to give up, but always aiming to walk forward. You know, Lucy Beaton way back in the day was one of the first people that, I think she wrote a letter to Queen Victoria asking for treaty and lands and things like this. And she's a relative of, you know, a distant relative of mine. And she was known as the Commodore. She had fleets of boats that used to go between Flinders Island and Launceston and the northern town of Tasmania, and to do commerce and trade, mutton birds and oils and all the things that come from, you know, one of the oldest Pakenham or Aboriginal industries in Australia, the Yola, which is the mutton name for the mutton bird, has been an industry in our family and many other big, strong Pakenham families and Palawa families for many years. And all these things grow from within the artwork. The artwork has several layers of discussions because it has the canoe sits inside the whaler boat. So, but the whaler boat is framed from I've built most of it from driftwood. And so the canoe itself is a whole canoe, but the whaler boat has been planked and it's got gaps. There's gaps in the planks which allow the light to come through, and you see the canoe on different shades of light. And so that sort of discusses how us as Palawa Pakenham people, we are all different shades of person. But the internal strength within us is the culture. And you can see that from any angle looking at the artwork. So it's a contemporary but very layered discussion point.
And that was a Palawa man, Dean Greeno. He's a former Qantas aircraft engineer and an artist, and he was talking to us today about his artwork that's featured in the Natia Art Awards. He's one of the award finalists, actually, and this is only part of our conversation. The full interview will be published on our website later this afternoon.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
And that was Shade Away by Electric Fields. And with this song, we come to the end of today's program. Thank you very much for your company this Wednesday afternoon. Your program will be back on Wednesday with more stories and news from right across the country. I'm Bertrand Tungandami. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
To reset. Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.